A bike-commuting, slightly scruffy, bearded social liberal. That's how one New York Times reporter described Mike McGinn, who took office nearly 4 years ago. In just a few weeks, Mayor Mike McGinn goes back to being just plain Mike McGinn, no longer mayor. His time in office saw the economy crash. The Department of Justice released a scathing report on Seattle police, and the city broke ground on many large construction projects. Who is the man that leaves the office of mayor 4 years later? Well, here to talk to us about his time as mayor is Mike McGinn. Thank you for coming in. I guess one last official time.
Yes.
I want you to think back 4 years to describe Seattle. What was this place like when you took office?
Well, you know, it's still in many ways the same place, of course. But we did have a deep recession, and I inherited that, as well as inheriting a deep mistrust between the community and the police department, which we then saw some high-profile issues bring that out in the forefront. I also think it's a place that is a great question, by the way. I also think it's a place that's in a very major transition and remains in a big transition. I think that's reflected in the results of my race 4 years ago and the results of the race this time, too. Both very close races. We're in a transition from one kind of town to another type of town, and we're also, and we're not alone. We're in a national economy in which there are huge changes occurring, and we have huge climate change coming at us as well. And I think the city is trying to respond to those changes.
You'd been the head of community organizations. You'd run a lot of groups, but you hadn't been a politician. What did you imagine that the job of mayor was going to be before you actually took it?
That's a hard question because it's so long ago, but I can probably pick out some things that
you must remember something.
Well, yeah, no. For one thing is that when you're the mayor, you don't get to pick and choose what issues you work on. There's a whole you do and you don't, right? There are issues you can prioritize, but you really have to make a big effort to prioritize those because there are so many issues that you simply have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
The first year, from an outsider's perspective, seemed like it was defined in some way by the Alaskan Way Tunnel Project. You campaigned saying you would let it go forward even though you opposed it. You wanted voters to weigh in after you took office. How do you think that issue of the waterfront tunnel really shaped that first year?
I accepted the fact that the tunnel was the choice, but I also took the position in my campaign and ran on it. People seem to forget this now, but I actually ran on the point that I didn't think we should have to pay for cost overruns on the tunnel and that we shouldn't sign the final agreements with the state until that issue was resolved and the state took responsibility by changing the state law. And I put that question to a vote and lost that vote. And the state has never changed their state law. And now we know Bertha's stuck. And we still don't have an answer to the question of who will pay cost overruns. So I think that in some respects that characterization of I did make that a priority. And that's a fair mm-hmm. characterization. I think that the other thing I learned as mayor, though, was I think that I did not appreciate the degree to which, even though I get a lot of attention as mayor and the mayor's office gets a lot of attention, that we had to be really diligent and good at telling the public about everything we were working on. And I don't think we did a very good job in our first year or two to tell the public about all the things we were doing. We were doing a lot. We had set the stage for the passage of a doubling of a family's an education levy. We launched a Seattle jobs plan in August of that year. And you can see, I think, that some of those things you can see manifested now. You know, we have outreach and job initiatives that still, you know, are kicking because of that foundation we laid. But we didn't do a very good job of telling people about what we were doing. And people then assumed that I only cared about one thing. And that was a failing of ours to not communicate better.
We can go back to sort of the fact, as you've told me many times over the years, there is no school for mayors. But I wonder about that stand and the tough line that you took with the state when it comes to cost overruns, how that affected your relationship with the governor and other state officials.
Oh, look, this was their legacy project. This was their monument. And frankly, it's kind of their pyramid. You know, the pharaohs built pyramids to be remembered by. I got the feeling that these folks were building a tunnel to be remembered by. And it's, you know, at such a cost. But what was fascinating to me and remains fascinating to me, that even though both the state and the city were adamantly for this project, neither was adamantly for paying all of the cost should it go over. And that was a form of cognitive dissonance would be an academic and genteel way of saying the behavior they were engaged in. And that just really bothered me. If you're for it, pay for it. If you're not for it, if you're not willing to pay for it, we got some good uses for $2 billion. We could build transit. We can build broadband. We can take care of education. There's lots of things we can do with that money instead of build something that'll take care of 40 or 50,000 cars a day in an era where global warming gets worse. So I still am struck by the extraordinary waste of money and the failure of politicians to actually want to own the project they say they care so much about.
I'm talking with Mike McGinn, still mayor of the city of Seattle. We did shout out on social media for some questions, and Chip Phillips wants you to answer the question, if you do know the answer, what year 99 will really be completed?
I don't know the answer, number one, so I just don't know.
You mentioned a few minutes ago money, and in fact, 2008, the rest of the country got hit with the recession. It sort of filtered over to us a little bit later, but is it a fair characterization to describe your term as being defined, at least the first couple of years, by the fact there was no money?
Absolutely. We had to make massive cuts in the city budget. We had unemployment in the area that was at 9.5%, and I think we kind of forget about that now as we, the line I use a few years ago, we were glad to see a crane or two appearing, and now we're saying, what's up with all those cranes? Can we slow it down? But at the time, we had deep unemployment in the construction industry. So that was one thing, was that it was really important to get people to invest in the city. The other one was, how would we balance our budget without sticking it to those who were already hurting the most? And we did that. We protected human services. And we made some hard choices as a result. People are still angry about parking meter rates. But why should we be not charging a market rate when I'm cutting community centers? Those things didn't add up to me.
You campaigned the first term and the second term on themes of social justice. I would say that that's a fair way to describe your view of a city that you want, one that is just for everybody. But when you don't have a lot of money, how do you pay for things that further social justice?
So number one, we didn't have a lot of money, and that did typify our term. So we had to focus on policies one way. Paid sick leave turned out to be a great way to help on social justice issues. How we handled our budget, who got the money and who didn't, made a big difference too. And we did work to spend our money in ways that drove social justice and environmental concerns. Those were both there. Policy things like getting a transit master plan underway so that we could connect our city with transit. That's really helpful to people. Allowing the micro apartments, another very controversial thing. We could have, people asked for and pushed for a moratorium on those. But when people can't afford to even live in the city, that was a social justice issue for me, to protect those types of units so that people with less money could find a place to live, however modest.
You were nicknamed very derisively Mayor McShwin early on. You rode here on your bike this morning despite the freezing cold. Some critics say you focused too much on bike infrastructure and alternative transportation. I'm curious, first of all, what you thought when you first heard that nickname.
Well, I got a little secret to tell you. I don't own a Schwinn. Hey, I got you on that one.
Mayor McCuffey. Mayor McRaleigh.
I actually own a Trek and a Raleigh.
McRaleigh, okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but that one doesn't rhyme. That also speaks to the issue of a city in transition that I mentioned at the front end. You know, the fact of the matter is that, and I think that there was this perception, too, in my first year that bike lanes were appearing, so I must be riding around the city saying, and then I'd get back to my office and call Peter Hahn and say, Peter, put in a bike lane here now.
Right? The head of the Department of Transportation.
Right. So I think there was this perception that the bike riding mayor was imposing bike lanes on the city. And that was actually a very difficult place to be in, because I think we've gotten so used to driving as the dominant mode of transportation that to even allow other modes on the streets was viewed as an imposition. And I know from our campaign that the phone calling, we called a lot of people. You could talk to them about jobs, you could talk to them about global warming, but by golly, there was a big chunk of voters that were never going to vote for me because of those damn bike lanes. And so it was very very powerfully held sentiment. I think we started to turn the corner on that when we focused on safety. The fact is people are riding not because the mayor rides a bike. They're riding because that's the way they choose to get around. People shouldn't get killed because they choose a different mode of transportation. And in fact, it makes communities much more livable and healthy and inviting to all. And it's part of an economic development strategy. And I think we've made, I think that this is some, this is a, I believe, part of my character is being accused of, pushing for things. But sometimes by pushing for things, you can have a debate about things and maybe resolve the debate. And I hope the biking debate is now resolved in the city of Seattle.
Well, in fact, I think the city council is now looking at a new bicycle master plan. So that may get implemented after you leave office, but a plan is in place.
And you have to go through, I mean, I think if you're talking about mayor's school, and maybe this is also my way of doing things as well, is, you know, one way of doing things is to figure out where's the middle of everybody right now, right? And also, at the same time, try not to do anything that causes any controversy or causes any headlines. And frankly, that's the way most politicians work, and it works pretty well for them. And the other way, and it's the way I chose, and I'm not so sure it worked out so well for me, although I still got a lot of supporters out there, and I'm very appreciative for the fact that, you know, it was a very close race at the end, and I appreciate for everyone who came out for me. The other way is, how do we get on the path, not how do we find out where the middle of where we are, how do we get on the path to where we all know we need to go? And if the middle of everybody right now is not on that path, then we have to have a conversation about, do we want to stay here or do we want to get on that path? And even if it's controversial, I think you have to have those conversations.
I'm talking with Mike McGinn. He has been mayor of the city of Seattle for 4 years. He has about another 3 weeks or so in office, I think. Before we talk more philosophically, I think, about being a leader of the city, I just have to touch, I'd be very remiss if I didn't touch on the Department of Justice, because one thing that you really didn't cut with all that budget cutting that went on were rank-and-file police. You advocated to add more officers. We didn't get as many officers as you might have wanted or citizens might have wanted. That was one thing. But the other thing that defined these past 4 years has been the ongoing push-pull about excessive police force, police brutality is another way that people talk about it. The Department of Justice first announced the investigation results in 2011, March 31st, to be really precise. You fought them. You had ongoing conversations. How would you characterize your relationship with the Department of Justice at this point?
Well, there's kind of two things you said in there that I just have to correct.
Okay.
One is we actually did let the police force go down by attrition in the first year or two by about 20 officers, and that was for budgetary reasons,
right.
And it was hard to do. And, in fact, the council members all attacked me for that, for doing that, even though they subsequently approved the budget. The other one is this issue of you fought the DOJ. And I really, I'm going to take issue with that. This was an issue of extraordinary importance, which is it implicates public safety and it implicates how the least powerful among us are treated. And you talked to me about being a social justice mayor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I am proud of that. And to me, what was really important was that we get it right, not that we the expedient. Now, remember, I was talking about there's ways to do things.
Right.
The easy thing to have done was to have signed the first agreement that was proposed to me. And I could have grandstanded and said, oh, this is horrifying. And, you know, let's just sign the first agreement and turn it over to somebody else. And that I viewed as not being the job of a mayor. And what we did was we did negotiate. And one of the things we got out of that was a community police commission in which members of the community are actually part of the reform process. And you will see in that past election, I got more support from communities of color than I got in my first election. So the people who are actually affected by the policies, the leaders of those communities, know who is on their side. And they know who's on their side because I was in those communities talking to them about how to succeed. Where I ran into trouble on the DOJ was with the politicians who saw this as an opportunity to advance their own position vis-a-vis running for mayor in a couple of years.
Hmm.
And that was, and of course the DOJ wanted their version of the agreement first, and I wanted to make sure we had an agreement that worked for our own community. And the cry of, he's opposed to reform, he's fighting the DOJ, he doesn't really care about this, was a tactic they used to try to get their version of what they wanted. And again, the politically expedient thing to do would have been to sign. The right thing to do was to actually work with the affected communities, as well as the police officers themselves, to try to set a framework to succeed.
We've had an interim police chief for a while. I think you were waiting to see if you got reelected before you made a final hire. What words of advice do you have for your successor, Ed Murray, when it comes to hiring?
You know, I think he's one of the... we'll have to see whether I offer him any words of advice moving forward, just because out of respect for the fact that he ran, he won, and he's got to do his own thing.
He gets to do it his way, as if you did it your way?
There is something there. But, of course, I'm going to reserve the right to provide words of advice if I really feel like it in the future.
I think that's something Mayor Emeriti get to do. How you conducted yourself in this job really evolved over the years. I'm thinking of the first State of the City address that you gave. You were very casual.
Yeah.
If I'm recalling correctly, you didn't wear a tie to that.
I did wear a tie.
You didn't wear a tie.
I did, too, wear a tie.
Maybe you didn't wear a sport coat.
You guys, I love the way history gets rewritten by people here. I did wear a suit and a tie. In fact, it was my biggest suit. I lost some weight, too.
Well, you did. That was one thing that you did. But when you think about your evolution as a person holding that office, how do you describe how you changed?
Well, I would say something like giving a speech was more about technique, if you will, right? That was more about just craft and the acquisition of craft. So there was certainly I certainly acquired greater craft at the job of being a mayor and being an elected official. I think the deeper question you ask is, what effect did it have on me as an individual?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that, democracy, there's two sides to it. I was talking about, when the public's yelling really loud and the editorial pages are all screaming, you want politicians who'll stand up and do what's right, and I've been kind of making that case here, mm-hmm. even if the whim of or the gale of popular opinion is strong in a certain direction, if it's the wrong thing, you do expect leaders to say, no, let's think about more. But the flip side of that is all of that does, in fact, have an effect, a real effect. I did, 150 town halls. And at first, I really hated them. I knew
really?
I was supposed to do them. Oh, I hated them. I remember in the campaign, I had done like 20 town halls in the primary or during the general. And now we were getting to the end. And my staff had the great idea, we'll do more town halls. And then as the mayor, beginning mayor, we started doing them, too. And actually, in the first year, they were more structured. And I felt at the time, it's so hard to stand up in front of people. Everybody wants answers, and I don't have all the answers. And everybody wants solutions to things that are decades long in the making, whether it's potholes or police reform mm-hmm. or homelessness or just flat-out inequity. And those really wore on me a lot. And what the effect was of doing them was I learned to love them, actually, because I recognized that ultimately – the public didn't want to know that you had all the answers, and that was a release. They wanted to know you were working on it. And number two, they weren't talking to me personally. They were talking to the city, and I was now the embodiment of the city. And so that was the other reason I started to love them, because we could – and then the third reason, this was the biggest one of all – good God, anytime I could get out of City Hall and its intrigue and talk to real people about real problems was so refreshing. I mean, City Hall, it's like crabs in a bucket down there at City Hall. Anytime anybody, one person starts going up, everybody else starts grabbing them to pull them back down because they're all fighting to be on the top of the heap.
So it must be then something of a relief to leave that part of the job.
I loved working with the public. I really did. And I loved working with the department heads. What struck me, you said things I learned, was every politician is in this because they feel something in their heart about the future. Everyone. But everyone is also in it because they enjoy the status and the power that comes with being elected. And I'm not going to exclude myself from that latter category. I loved there were certain things that came with the job, which were just fun, the recognition, the attention. You don't like it, but you love it too. The problem is that I think that the deeper people are in it and the deeper they get into the game and the more time they spend in politics, the status and the climbing and the knocking other people down becomes a game in and of itself. And what gets lost is the public good. And, you know, no politician wants to find themselves where I found myself, right? Where you had the major daily, day after day hammering you, tens of thousands of dollars being poured in from the business community to defeat me. And most of the Democratic Party leaders, I had some great Democratic elected officials on my side, but many of them teaming up too, because, you know, I was rocking the boat too much. Right. And they just wanted, they didn't want to see that. And so over time, what you see is politicians, the strategy I said about the middle, it works until it doesn't work because there's so many problems not attended to.
What do you regret?
You know, that's an awesome question. And, you know, I play basketball still, and I played in a lot of leagues. And every time you lose a game by a couple of buckets, and this was a game that we lost by a couple of buckets, I got 47-5 at the end, which was super close,
mm-hmm.
a lot closer than all the pollsters and pundits ever said it would be. You can replay it and try to figure out, God, if I'd made a better pass or taken a higher percentage shot or played a little bit of defense on that, I could have won it. So I do a lot of that. But at the same time, every time I look back at something I wish, you know, oh, if I'd done that differently, I might have won. I would have had to have had kind of a personality transplant somewhere along the way. And that wasn't who I wanted to be. So, you know, my biggest regret is I wish I'd learned faster and developed the craft of the being the mayor faster. And that would have been good because I think we could have spoken better to people about what we were actually doing and not... The other people who understood the craft of working the media defined me for the public
mm-hmm.
and didn't allow me to define myself. And I regret that I couldn't do a better job of that.
Are you going to run for public office again?
I don't know. I never planned on running for public office in the first place.
You didn't?
No, I didn't. Well, you know, I've got to be honest, completely honest here. When I worked for a congressman, I saw who was elected to Congress. And there were two qualifications, age and citizenship. And those appeared to be the only two qualifications. So it dawned on me that anybody can run for office. And I thought about that. But shortly after I graduated from law school and had kids, I said, I'm never going to run for office. And at that point, I volunteered on what I believed in. I worked in the Sierra Club and took on the whole world on roads and transit.
Right.
I worked in my neighborhood and, you know, irritated elected officials by pushing for stuff. But it turned out that that was, for me, in this time and in a special set of circumstances, enabled me to run. And I look back at that lesson now. And so as I look to the future, if all I do is position to run again, I probably won't work on the things I care about, and I probably won't be as fulfilled. So I'm just going to go work on what I believe in. And if an opportunity arises like it did this time, I would look at it, but I'm not gonna spend my time trying to move those planets into place to run again.
Arlene wrote us. She says, "What are things that voters most want to see accomplished in order to give a mayor two terms? Because we are notorious as a city that defeats one-term mayors."
You know, I,
you aren't the first one. In other words,
no. And I haven't reflected too much on this, and it's really interesting. You know, the last two mayors went out in the primary, which was really rough. And I mean, it's rough losing an election. Let's be really clear about that. I was very, very disappointed, of course, and had worked so hard and wanted to keep the job and wanted to keep doing it. So it's rough to lose. I think that part of the thing is that, you know, when you're mayor, there's no hiding. You know, you have to work on every issue, and you're really out there. So I'm not sure I have any advice for anybody on how what exactly you're supposed to do. My view was, I made a promise to myself when I took office. I was going to do what I thought was right, let the chips fall where they may, and hope the public could see what I was trying to accomplish. I probably hoped a little too much and wasn't, as I said, skillful enough at really talking to people about what motivated me, what motivated our administration, and what we were trying to do. And the evidence of that is you fought the DOJ, which is now in lore, as opposed to, no, we thought we had a place in defining what the shape of reform would be and what the role of the community would be in shaping it. That's not fighting reform. That's working for reform.
Mike McGinn, mayor of Seattle, good luck.
Thank you.